Apex Express, Asian Pacific Expression.
Community and cultural coverage.
Music and calendar.
New visions and voices.
Coming to you with an Asian Pacific Islander point of view.
It's time to get on board the Apex Express.
Let me get started. Hi there. Welcome to Acre Thursdays on Apex Express Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Yuan and my pronouns are she and her. I'm the director of the organization currently known as APINC. We're an organization of transgender, non-binary, and queer Asians and Pacific Islanders fighting for community safety, healing justice, and sustainable movements in the San Francisco Bay Area. But today, I am so proud and excited to announce that APINC is changing our name. What? After more than a decade as APINC or API Equality Northern California, from today onwards, we will be known as Lavender Phoenix. Woo! Our name, Lavender Phoenix, is a commitment to our past and our future. It's an homage to Lavender Godzilla and Phoenix Rising, the first ever newsletters created by and for our lesbian, gay, and queer API elders in the 1980s here in the Bay Area. In them, our people challenged isolation, connected and celebrated each other, and kept each other safe. They committed to imagining each other and our community's future, even when that seemed impossible. We chose this name after a two-year process that involved over 200 original name ideas, a community-wide voting process, and a final decision by APINC's core leadership committee. And we are so proud to call ourselves Lavender Phoenix because it reminds us of the generations of trans and queer APIs who fought for us to thrive and the generations that we will fight for too. So today I am joined by a small group of incredible people who I admire deeply. And together we're just gonna kick it and reflect a little on this history, our visions and dreams for the future. And we're going to talk a little about this new name too. So I want to give everyone an opportunity to introduce yourselves first. Will you share your name, your pronouns, and your relationship to Lavender Godzilla or Phoenix Rising? I'll pass it over first to you, Vince.
Hi, everyone. Vince Chrysostomo. Pronouns are he, him, his. And I joined GAPA in 1992. So I sort of consider myself one of the second wave folks. And in the middle of the 90s, I was like forever co-chair and sometimes just chair because my other chairs kept quitting. And yeah, then one of the other things, we had a Godzi Award and I got one of those. And I just want to say, I'm so happy to be here because we don't really honor our history. And if you think about it, whatever our gender, whatever path we walk, we're like companions on this journey. You know, to be able to share this. And I'm so grateful to APINC, now Lavender Godzilla, for doing this. I'm already choked up. So in case anybody doesn't know, every time I go to an APINC meeting, I cry. So that may happen today. I'm going to pass it on to Giselle.
Thanks, Vince. Hi, everyone. I'm Giselle Pohan. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I hail from the early days of Phoenix Rising newsletter. We were barely a newsletter back then. It was a couple of pieces of paper stapled together with really announcements of when our next potluck is and who's new in town kind of stuff. But as API queers back in the day, it was hard to find each other. So we created Phoenix Rising as a way to reach out to other queer women of Asian descent and to just have sisterhood together. So that's how I got started. And through that, I met some of the other folks on this panel, and I'm looking forward to hearing all about them too. And I will pass it on to Dino next.
Hi, I'm Dino Duazo, he, him, his pronouns. And I've been involved with GAPA since before it was even GAPA in 1987. And actually I was the first person to work on, I helped with the Lavender Godzilla newsletter way back then. That was back in 1987, 88. And I've been involved. I was involved with it for quite a few years. I was the sole editor in the 2000s, I think. So I've been really involved. And I really appreciate this forum too, because it's nice to acknowledge the impact that we had way back then. Because recently I'm actually going to be working on the GAPA newsletter again. And the newsletter before me had changed it to Lab Gods. He contracted the name. And I wanted to go back and change it to Lab and Godzilla. And our graphic designer said, oh, maybe you should tell people what it means, because they might not have a context, even though it had been changed for only maybe a year and Lab and Godzilla had been around for decades. But there's still people really don't know about our history. So I really appreciate us having an opportunity to kind of share what we went through way back then and what we continue to do right now. So thanks for having us here. And Lori, next person.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lori Lai, she, her, hers, and I was one of the founders of Phoenix Rising, along with Giselle and Darina and a whole bunch of other folks, actually, that really deserve a lot of credit. Our, I think, main mission was to create some kind of communications vehicle, create some community amongst queer Asian women, and we were, I think, one of the few newsletters around of the kind and that kind. And I was editor of, I think, for a bunch of years in the mid to late 80s, and just enjoyed my role as trying to round people up and get people to write articles. And I mean, we had everything there. We had recipes, we had softball, sports events. There were actually real pieces expressing all kinds of topics, bisexuality, anything was a game. And we even had a kind of like a Dear Abby column for a while. It was just fun. And I made use of my time as co-editor in high school newspaper. And I also wrote for my college papers to sort of get my editorial journalistic skills to bear. And it really helped that during that time, the Apple came out and it had a publishing program, which seems like, well, it was in the last century. But anyway, that was a major, I think, because before that, we just had Marie Shim just hand typing these columns, and then we would literally paste them and make it into a newsletter, very homespun. But after I bought an Apple, well, I don't think it was a Macintosh at that point, but anyway, it was an Apple computer. We were able to, in that tiny little screen, actually have a real newsletter. I don't know if it was PageMaker, but anyway, we got some program and away we went and never really looked back. But I'm just so happy that it helped a lot of women stay in touch and built that community for folks. And I'll pass it to Darina.
Oh, thank you, Lori. I go by she, her, and hers. Yes, I'm so kind of thrilled to actually be able to talk about our history, because I think so many of us really don't know our history, and because we haven't really kind of lifted up all the things that we've done and written it down. As they say, those who record history are those who they think make history, but that's not necessarily true, as we know. At any rate, so yes, along, you know, Lori and Giselle, I helped co-found Phoenix Rising. Some of us had been organizing for many years before, like Giselle and I were involved in one of the first Asian American feminist groups, where actually most of us were lesbians, although we may not have said that because it was safer to be a feminist. And actually, I like to think back and think that out of like almost all of, well, about half of us, I guess, were out lesbians. And then by the end, almost everybody came out. Not everybody, but almost. At any rate, this is during the women's feminist movement with consciousness raising groups. And so that was one of those, except for Asian women. So there had been organizing going around since that group started in 1976. And then it was really hard because seemed so few of us to be able, as Giselle said, to connect with each other. And Lori has mentioned to create a sense of community. So in order to do that, we created Phoenix Rising, a very simple 4-page newsletter. And we wanted it to kind of serve as a way to build that sense of community so people would not feel so isolated and alone, right? That you could know that you belonged to that there are many more of us than just maybe the one or two you might occasionally see at the bars. And so I helped to start it because it started in 1984, but then I had to move and leave. I went to New York for law school, but I'm so happy that Lori and Giselle and many others actually continued that for many years after that, because I think it was kind of a connection for the whole community so that we could keep in touch with each other. And it was kind of an informal way to create a network, which we eventually did create a more formal Asian Pacific lesbian and bisexual transgender network out of that.
Hey everyone, I'm Leo Hegde. I use he and they pronouns. I come to this conversation as a part of APINK, well, formerly APE, now Lavender Phoenix. So I'm a community organizer with Lavender Phoenix. That sounds really cool to say. And yeah, I'm just really excited to be here, hear some stories about Phoenix Rising, hear some stories about Lavender Godzilla, and just learn how you all were creating community and combating isolation, as you're all naming right now. Super inspiring to hear about. And I'm excited to hear more.
Wow, amazing. Thanks so much for sharing, y'all. It's so beautiful to hear not only your names and voices, but, you know, what a little bit of your relationship was with Lavender Godzilla and is with Phoenix Rising. I really want to just open it up and invite folks to share. You know, I've heard and talked to you all about the purpose of both of these newsletters originally and why you created them, but I'd actually love to learn for you personally, as Lori, as Vince, as Dino, why did you want to be a part of this at the time? Why did you want to get involved, and why did it matter to you? Vince, can we start off with you?
It's interesting. I was in New York, and I forget what the name of the gay bookstore, the alternative bookstore, as they called it back then, was, but I actually saw a copy of Phoenix Rising. And I looked at this, I said, this is in San Francisco. I think they charge people like $3 for it. So I don't know, you guys maybe missed out on the money part. And when I moved to San Francisco with my then partner at the time, and I met GAPA, they were putting together one of the magazines, because we had the newsletter and then we had these magazines. And so I wrote a story. It's the first thing I'd ever written, and it got published. And I thought, wow, this is an outlet. And myself and the person that I was dating at the time made the cover. And I think that that magazine had more life than the relationship, because that didn't last so long. I've actually been traveling in places. I was in China a few years ago, and this is like 20 years after the fact. And somebody brought a copy of that magazine to the meeting that I was hosting and asked, is this you? And I'm like, yes. And they said, is this you? And they pointed to something on Grindr. I'm like, no, that's not me. But it was my first sense of community. And I tell people, like, my mother, we didn't, as a Pacific Islander, my mother said we were Oriental, but we weren't. And so when this came up, I'd never written anything. And I loved the idea of having that voice and being able to. And if it wasn't for Dino, I think it would have faded by the side. But Dino was always coming up with these topics for us to write about. And I'll share one more thing, and then I'll, but one of them was about my dad that I wrote about. And it was shortly after I'd come out to him, and he's passed. And so I went back to read it, and it was this, like, one of the first sort of changes in our relationship. So yeah, so it's kind of a history, and things that we didn't think meant anything, we were just trying to meet a deadline, in hindsight, in the history, actually turned out to mean a lot more.
Wow. Vince, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Yeah, that really means a lot. And if you still have a copy, I would love to read that sometime. Yeah, I'm really curious for other folks on this, in this call. Did any memories come up for you as Vince was speaking, or why did you want to get involved with those newsletters at the time?
Hi, this is Giselle. Well, so with Phoenix Rising, as Zarina mentioned, a lot of us were originally from a, like, what they used to call a consciousness raising or a feminist group. But I distinctly remember in college when I'd visit friends at different campuses, whether it's SF State or UC Berkeley, and this is like back in the late 70s. If you saw an Asian person who looked queer or gay walking down the street, you cast your eyes away. If you saw a Latinx person or an African American person, they'd raise their fists. They greet each other as brother, sister. And that struck me, that why? Why can't I do the same with my Asian sister or brother, right? So for me, working on Phoenix Rising was a way to reach out and to say that we're proud of who we are. Sorry, yeah, get weepy. But it was a way to stand up and say, I am here, I'm queer, get used to it. It's like we have place. So, and I met a lot of great people. So that was like a bonus. Anyone else have some thoughts?
Hi, this is Dino. I think I kind of echo what Giselle was saying. Getting involved with GAPA really helped me find the sense of identity that was kind of vague before. Like I would always split between whether it's gay or Asian. It never got combined, but finally with GAPA, it got combined into a whole, which was really empowering for me and exhilarating and exciting. And that kind of translated a little bit into the newsletter because GAPA was brand new and we were sharing ourselves with the world through the newsletter. And so it's just like, what I remember most about GAPA though was I thought we would be just telling all these personal stories, sharing our voice. But actually in the beginning, I looked at through the old newsletters, and in the beginning, it was just kind of like notices, things about what we were doing. But even that, like 30 years later, it still has an impact because it tells you what our community was doing way back then and kind of laying the groundwork for what the community is doing now. So it's nice to look back, but then also it's nice to see where we've gone, where we still have to go. And it feels good to feel like we shared something in the past that's able to let us move forward too. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is Dorina. What Giselle and Dino both are saying about being able to be your whole self and having been so invisible for so long and having been working through the pain of that isolation and kind of alienation from everyone else. So I've kind of, like, I consider myself a product of many movements, like the Asian American empowerment movement, the feminist movement, the lesbian and queer movement, lesbian and gay and queer, so that I could kind of finally come to a place where I felt, as you said, proud of being who I am, or being able to be comfortable with who I am, and trying to reach out to others like me to kind of build that sense of empowerment, just feeling like I was worthwhile. And that is, yeah, why I've always kind of, my whole life, I still do organizing within the Asian American Pacific Islander community, as well as the LGBT community, because that is where I get my strength. That is where I get my energy to keep going, because I believe in social change. And the only way I can do it is getting kind of support from, like, my brothers and sisters, like on today's call, right? Because that's home to me. It is my family. And that is why I help start Phoenix Rising. That is why I help organize different groups across the country, helped with API Equality LA. It's just because we need to support each other, because nobody else is going to do it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. And so Phoenix Rising was one opportunity to do that. And I'm so happy that people felt they could plug in and carry it on, because without people being committed and carrying on all of those efforts, we can't build a movement. We can't build our institutions.
Thank you so much, Dorina. This is Yuan again. It was so beautiful to hear everyone's different thoughts there and memories. And I'm really curious. Everything that I hear in what you said just speaks to such a deep commitment, even when it felt impossible, to make space for yourselves, to be your full authentic selves, to, like Giselle said, create an environment and relationships where, as trans and queer API people, we don't turn away from each other or ourselves when we see each other. We turn towards each other and acknowledge each other. I also know, though, that those years that Lavender, Godzilla, and Phoenix Rising were really thriving and being created, those were also not easy years for our community. A lot of that came in the wake and during the time in the heights of the HIV/AIDS crisis and the deep isolation and pain that came with that. And so I really want to ask you all, as folks listen to you today, what was it like to create and to connect and write and support each other through years that were so hard for our community? Lori, I want to ask, will you start us off and share?
Yes, it was a very difficult time. I live on a very short street, a one block street, Montezuma Street in San Francisco. And we literally had seven guys die on our little street, including my next door neighbor. And it was just horrific. And we would, I mean, while they could, they would sometimes go out and have a walk, and they were like walking skeletons. It was just, it was horrible, and spots all over them. I actually worked in the San Francisco General Emergency Room lab. So I got to see quite a few cases at San Francisco General. And I handled a lot of the blood and did blood tests. Back then, we didn't even have gloves. And so we were risking our lives every single day that we went to work. But I just felt it was part of our job. I remember having blood drives because back then, I don't know about now, but back then you couldn't get a unit of blood unless you got somebody else to donate for you. So they rounded up, or not rounded up, but called up for a lot of lesbians to volunteer for our brothers, because they didn't have often family, or they weren't in touch with their family in order to give blood. So we went ahead and donated our blood so that they could actually have some platelets. A lot of them had bleeding problems and other problems because of their illness. So we were trying to fill in for that. And yeah, it was, I stuck myself with a needle once. I had to go through HIV testing myself. It was a long 2 weeks before I knew what the results were. So it was very tough. I mean, when I look back, it was like a war zone. And it definitely, when you went to Castro, it was very, very, very sobering to see people living with AIDS. There was at that time no treatment. So it was pretty much a death sentence. I could never forget one of the guys, I think it was at GAPA, that somehow didn't even, when he contracted HIV, did not really engage with people. And he just didn't tell his parents and somehow died alone in his, wherever he was living. And it was, everybody cried then. It was so sad. I mean, to think that he didn't, the shame or whatever it was that he was feeling, it was just hard. And I mean, all of us could have at least visited him or done something more, but I think he just didn't really, he kind of withdrew. And I'm sure he wasn't the only one. He was the only one I knew of, but yeah, it was very tough those years. After me is...
Oh, Lori, I see. I think Vince is ready to share something. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lori.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing this up, because I think most everybody knows I've been living with HIV now for about 34 years. And around 94, I switched from I had a theater program to doing the emotional practical volunteer support program for GCHIP. And it was incredible because many of the women in the community joined that. And there were so many folks that I'm so grateful to. And then we had this big holiday thing. But another reason why I participated in Lavender Godzilla was because so many of my clients needed to read those stories. It was a way for them to know. So I would bring copies of it to their homes and things. And so many stories, what Lori just shared, that was actually typical in our community at times. So many people were so ashamed that they would just cut off. And I mean, at GAPA, we did have the Community HIV Project and people bonded together. But many times once somebody knew they got it, they just kind of withered away and died. And so it's one of the things that in my work that I do now, I think about, what is the ticket to get people out of their homes and connect? What is that thing that's going to motivate them to do that? And one of the things that did switch with our community, which is different from like the gay white men, which make up the majority of San Francisco's HIV, is that in our group, there were a core group of us that survived and still see each other today and support each other and still finally try to recall the various people in our community who supported us. There was one, Jan was one of my volunteers who was from, and I think they died of cancer in the early 2000s. Someone said, we should have a program for everybody, not just for HIV, but for anybody in our community. And I think APINK's community care thing started to do some of that. I keep forgetting, I didn't say this is Vince, but I guess Ewan said that for me. Actually, when I do these things, sometimes I'm not even sure I answer the question. Like, I stay on point. But it's so emotional for me to think of these things, because the other thing is, just as a person living with HIV who thought he was going to die at any moment, I remember just, oh God, standing watching our community and think, God, this is what I'm going to lose. I never had that growing up. I never had that. You know, the only gay Asians I knew were from the bars when they saw me as competition, so we didn't really become friends. And I thought this is such a magnificent community, and I was so proud to be a part of it. And I will turn it over to somebody else because I can feel my throat tightening. And we did a peer counselor thing too. I was going to shut up and I start talking again. This is Vince again. But we did this peer counseling where we actually were the only ones who did a co-gender thing, where we had someone, we had trans folks, we had lesbians, we had bisexuals, we had everybody from our community was represented in that peer counseling, I call it thing, but it was a peer counseling group.
Hey Vince, this is Giselle. I was part of that peer counseling group.
Yeah. I know you were. Yeah.
I thought, wow, this is such a kick. This is great. Asians helping Asians, right on. So I joined this group, and of course, at the time I was older, I was like probably 30, you know, so, but I had the best time and I met so many neat people, and that's where I met Vince, was part of that group. Thanks for mentioning it. I had forgotten. So I'll pass it on to someone else, whoever wants to jump in and carry the ball.
This is Yuan again. Giselle, I knew you just passed the ball on to someone else, but I also remember having a conversation with you about this time, like working on Phoenix Rising during the time of the HIV/AIDS crisis. And I remember you sharing some really powerful reflections with me. And I know people who are listening to this would really value hearing that too. And I'm curious, like, what was that like for you at the time? Not just as a writer and editor, but as a person. Yeah.
Oh, this is Giselle again. Thanks, Ian. That there was such joy and life and festivity before AIDS hit. You'd go to the Castro. We had just the women alone. There were 9 different lesbian-only bars in San Francisco. Okay, this is 24/7 only for girls. And I don't know how many there were for men, but we went. They had great parties, great dances, the best DJs. There was so much festivity. And then we just all got slapped silly by this awful, awful disease. And I think Lori and Vince mentioned the stigma. There was huge stigma to having contracted HIV/AIDS. So not only were you fighting this awful, vicious disease, there was shame, and more shame associated with it. So for me, I was renting a little flat in the Mission. Most of my building was gay men, and it was home. I mean, this awful disease came to my home and hurt my neighbors and hurt my friends, right? And then later on in the 90s, my hairstylist that I love dearly, straight Japanese girl from Hawaii, living the big life on Union Street, styling hair, by blood transfusion, she gets HIV and she passes away. I didn't know until her sister reached out and said, she's on her last days. And I thought, what, last days of what? What is she talking about? It's like, but because of her shame, she did not let people know that she had contracted AIDS. And so it just affected so many facets of your community as a young, vibrant adult living in San Francisco Bay Area. This is a time when you're sowing your oats and you're starting your career and all this, but there was this huge dark cloud and just profound sense of loss. Vince had mentioned this before, but just profound sense of loss. We had, I'm blanking on the name of this free newspaper, but there was this gay community free newspaper, and it was like 36 pages of obituaries, right? Remember, guys, we'd see it on the newsstands, and we'd pick it up. We used to pick up this newspaper to figure out what great party or our equivalent of a rave, what great thing was happening back, you know, where am I going to check out on the weekends? But now it was just in pages and pages of these beautiful people who have it all passed, right? I mean, and then when we all started quilting for the AIDS quilt, right? There were so many names, and there was an all call to the community, please come and help and quilt and let's have every name have a place, right? Every name is important. And anyway, I'm kind of rambling, sorry. It was profoundly, I won't say scarring, but it's a strong impact, even as a lesbian in a community that in a time of disease that largely affected gay men, but it affected all of us, impacted all of us just by virtue of its profound loss, right? So just profound loss. So I hope younger generations can not experience that type of situation, but I hope that they can imagine how that type of experience kind of changes you for life, and you become a much more compassionate, a less judgy. it changes you, because you can't just say that affects somebody else, not me. It affects all of us. Anyway, sorry, I rambled. So I will take it back to you, Yuan.
I guess this is Dorina speaking. I guess I would just add that, yes, it was kind of just an incredibly unbelievable hard time, because we all knew someone or some lots of people, but we all knew people who had died or been affected. Like, we contribute to the quilt, and we all, I think, felt it very deeply. But what I choose kind of to remember is the response of our community, not only that lesbians and gay men, that was an opportunity to come together and support each other, which we had been kind of more on kind of separate paths perhaps, but I think that brought women and men together, but also the incredible organizing that our community was able to do through groups like ACT UP. And I just remember all of those posters that said silence equals death when they were, the Reagan administration was refusing to even say the name AIDS, and that our communities fought back against that. I mean, I think that helped us kind of fight back from all of the death that we saw and all of the negativity, right? That we could choose to try to organize and force basically the administration and the FDA do research on it and to find some kind of treatment for it, which took, of course, years. But I think that I like to think of that as a model for our community of responding to challenges that we've had to overcome, right? That you don't just kind of give up. But I think we've used those kind of strategies and tactics and continue to use it. Other communities use it, right? To actually use a nonviolent means to actually all lay down in the streets and, you know, try to use that kind of community organizing to fight back. And I think that showed that our community could fight back. And that's, I think, the lesson that I think we should take from that.
This is Lori, and I just wanted to comment on how that era of HIV and AIDS really shaped my own career. I went into the biotech industry and spent over 10 years of my life, and I'm still doing it, product managing for sexually transmitted infections. My first product with Novartis Diagnostics was HIV. HCV and HBV blood screening molecular assays. I went on to get my doctorate in global health and epidemiology in order to help develop some of these diagnostic tools, tests to help identify the disease earlier or to screen the disease. I also looked after people after taking these drugs for a while, they develop resistance. So I did looked after a test that actually sequenced the virus and looked for resistance markers. And now I'm also working on with my current company on some other STDs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, et cetera. So it's been a long journey, and it certainly has given me a lot of purpose in my life after going through those very tough times in the 80s. I really wanted to devote my life to do something more on the scientific side, but still something that would really matter.
Hey, this is Jen. Lori, thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks to everyone just now who shared such beautiful reflections about a really hard time. I just want to invite everyone. I know that not everyone listening will hear us, but for all of us here, I just want to invite you to take a little breath together after. Thank you all so much for helping us remember. We just have time for about two more questions. And I want to make sure that we have a little room to talk about joy too, because I know that in all of the conversations I had with each of you before today, I would hear so much about like how fun it was actually to put these newsletters together, the joy of getting together over potlucks and home-cooked food with each other, and some of the sweet, sweet moments that were so important to that time. So I'm super curious, and Dino, I'd love to invite you to share first. I think we can hear from one or two people. What were some of the things about that time that brought you a sense of joy and connection, or what Giselle talked about earlier, that sense of we're here, we're queer, and we're actually going to celebrate that.
Yeah, hi, this is Dino again. One of the things we did was we'd always set up these monthly social events, and where it was for us, by us, for our community. And it really helped build that sense of connection. We just rent a little room in at Fort Mason Center, have like maybe 100 people. And even though people knew that there's the clubs afterwards, this is a way for us to connect first. And then end to 10, and then they could do the bar stuff. But it really made a huge difference in terms of connecting and getting together. I mean, because back in the early 90s, the late 80s, early 90s, we'd have a GAPA meeting in the Castro, and then we'd walk down the street and there'd be hardly any Asians out there. And now it's like, it feels like it's half of the population in the Castro is Asian, but back then it wasn't. So it was really a great way to feel like we weren't alone. We could have fun, we could have dances, we could have parties, and just build the community one connection at a time. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. Actually, there was this one time when we had a float, GAPA had a float at the Pride Parade, and our Miss GAPA was Maria Imelda Marcosa. So we created this huge float shaped like a shoe, and we made giant sequins, purple sequins to put on them. And it felt like every GAPA member came, and it took forever to make, but it was so much fun. And just having everybody together it kind of feels sad now that the community's kind of dispersed, and we didn't have that kind of that joint commitment to a purpose together like we did back then. But it's just great to kind of think back, and it's like a vision of what we could do together. Just like everybody had shared that fun, doing fun things too, fun, productive things, and maybe silly, but it really made a big difference for people. So
this is Vince butting in. This has been really great. There was one moment in the community that I don't know who was there, but it was the Chinese New Year parade, the first one that we all marched in. And I just remember people showing up and wearing masks. And I remember watching this on television because I wasn't in town. And then I remember watching the masks come off. And I don't know if anybody was there, if anybody marched in that, but it was so beautiful to see. Because when people first showed up, I was like, they're wearing masks. What's the point of being out if they're wearing masks? But then to watch people take them off, it was just so beautiful. And I think we got a picture in Out magazine. I don't know if we put one in Labrador Godzilla or Phoenix Rising. But, you know, for me, that was what the joy was. And I'm so glad you have this, because I thought our stories were so tragic. I had a theater program. I'm like, these stories are really tragic. We need to cultivate some joy here. But for me, it was the community and the stories and people discovering that there was another gay, Asian, lesbian, or trans person that they could relate to. And that's what it taught me. The joy was the community that we had. And maybe it wasn't always perfect. We always rose up, and I actually think that that's one of the reasons why I'm still alive today, because I found that community. And I'm not one of the people that passed, and that's where my story ends. But yeah, so I don't know if anybody was here for that, but it was just such a beautiful, I forget what year it was, and they had animal masks. And then just to watch people take those off and just come out in public was just so beautiful.
Hi, this is Dino. Actually, I was at that parade the first time we showed up at the Chinese New Year parade. And there was really a lot of fear in the beginning in terms of how the crowd would react. We even had people from Asian Law Caucus who would be monitoring and make sure that like negative stuff wouldn't happen. But GAPA had this huge balloon dragon and we would kind of run around with it. And in the middle of it, there would be so much joy in terms of being out and proud and in the community and running around with this dragon. So they may have, in terms of what Vince was talking about, I mean, just that kind of connection we had, us being all there together, probably made it feel safer for people. And then once the parade was all over, and we'd be just like, wow, that was awesome. I mean, there was a sense of relief, but sense of joy too, and fulfillment that we're out there being part of the bigger API community. We're not just our own group. We're part of a larger whole too. So yeah, it was a real exciting time.
This is Janik.
I thought he was going to say it didn't happen that way at all. Vince is lying. Or Vince is wrong.
Well, this is Jen again. Thank you so much for sharing that memory. And you're right, it is so beautiful to hear about the moments we were joyful and supporting each other and in the easy and the hard times. We just have time. I want to make sure to respect everyone's time here. I think this conversation could go on forever. I think we all need to get together over some tea or something and just hang out and hash it out. But we just have time for one last question. I'd love to hear from a few people. Everyone here learned about APINK or Lavender Phoenix's new name before this conversation. And I know everyone here had a different and a personal reaction to it. So I would love to hear from two or three people. Tell us about your reaction when you heard that our community had chosen the name Lavender Phoenix. How did it land with you? How did it feel to receive? And Leo, I want to start off with you as one of the people who chose that name. How did it feel to you when you were part of that decision-making process as part of APINK's or Lavender Phoenix's staff team?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, Yun. This is Leo. Yeah, I think that when we were going through that process, just like aesthetically, I was like, wow, y'all chose really powerful names for your newsletters. And combining it, I'm like, oh, it sounds great. But beneath that kind of like aesthetic draw, I think there's an aspect that I've always loved about the organizing work that I've done with Lavender Phoenix, which is being rooted in history. And when we were choosing the name, I think I knew very surface level what that meant. I was like, I know that you all were both creating newsletters during this time period. And I was like, yeah, totally. Like we're continuing this work. But I actually think in this conversation, I'm seeing all of these like really deep connections to things that like we are feeling and moving through right now, like hearing you all talk about this fear or this sense of loss that happened during the HIV AIDS epidemic. Like I can't even imagine experiencing it that on that scale, and I like really appreciate y'all sharing those stories. And at the same time, I'm feeling this like connection to, I think, the fear that a lot of like myself as like a trans South Asian person, I feel like a lot of the people in my community, there's always this fear for me of like, will we lose them, right? At now during the pandemic and just in general, just like moving through the world with this intersection of identity, I think there is a lot of fear on that and a lot of loss that comes with that. And I think I'm hearing from you all something similar to actually what I felt, which is that creating this sense of purpose, creating this sense of compassion, shaping how we like fight back against shame, against silence, which isolates us, and even like leaning on each other for strength. Lori, the story that you shared about folks showing up to give blood, I like can think of no like more poetic way to say, hey, I'm showing up for you. I will literally give you my blood. And that's how I feel about a lot of people in our community. So it just feels so right to me that we are taking on this name. And I feel in a lot of ways that like, I hope to honor that legacy. Yeah, I think it just feels really beautiful to hear these stories and to know what we're trying to continue. Yeah. And I would love to hear from other folks as well.
For me, I think this is Lori again. I think it's a wonderful name, and it does resonate even across the country. And really even into Asia because of the connections I made with Phoenix Rising and visiting Asian lesbians of the East Coast. And also later on connecting with, through connections again, the lesbian group in Japan. I lived there for 4 years. And then the lesbian group in Hong Kong, Phoenix Rising, got to be pretty well known. And so there's in this name, I think you'll see that there's going to be some deep connections, not just across time, but across geography. So I'm very, very, I think it's just a wonderful, auspicious name.
Well, with that, Lori, thank you. This is Yuan. And you know, Lori, you just talked about how you think this is an auspicious name, and in the spirit of that fortune, in the spirit of goodwill, I would love to invite us to close this conversation by sharing a wish. And I will say for anyone who's listening, we didn't prepare, this was not script. We don't have any like prepared answers for any of these questions, but I want to ask everyone here, Giselle, Darina, Dino, Lori, Vince, Leo, will you end this conversation by sharing a one-sentence wish for our community going forward? I know that one sentence will not capture everything, but I know that it will mean so much to hear your wish for us. So I'm going to bring us back to our original order when we introduced ourselves. And I'm going to ask Vince to start us off with your one-sentence wish. And then you can pass it to Giselle.
Okay, this is Vince. My wish is very simple. I wish you all love. Just pure and simple. And I'm going to pass it on to Giselle.
Oh man, you stole mine. This is Giselle. I wish you all the strength to be proud of your authentic self. That's what I wish. And I will pass it on to, who is next? We have to scroll up. I'll pass it on to Dino.
Okay, this is Dino. So just based on all that we've been talking about, my wish is for us to bloom together as a community and to being the best we can be, which is there and ready to make itself now. I'll pass it to Lori.
Yeah, I wish that Lambertdor Phoenix not only will continue the work of building this beloved community within the LGBTQ plus Asian space, but also to build beloved community with beyond that and have people really appreciate the wonderful diversity, intersectionality, and it's just so much beauty that is going to come out of it. So wishing you all the best.
Oh, this is Darina. I guess I'm so, yes, I wish that you take our history and share it with others and help them understand how far we've come and how wonderful we are as a community, and that we are all here to help and whenever you need, or just to share our talk with you. I love the idea of our community carrying on and growing. And that's why I love the idea that you've taken the names of two of our institutions and are using that to continue to build a sense of community, and I am so proud of you for doing that.
Wow, thanks y'all for those wishes. This is Leo. I think this is similar to what Darina spoke about, but I'm really wishing for those of us in the Zoom room and those of us not in the Zoom room that we can continue to share and witness each other's stories. I know that I've found so much like meaning in this conversation itself, and I think that's what moves us forward. So,
and with that, it's time for us to close this conversation. Thank you all so much. We've gathered here because as trans and queer Asians and Pacific Islanders across generations, we know as well as anyone that names hold power. across our communities, names have brought us both struggle and healing. We've learned to live with new spellings across migration and war. Many of us have mended our names and created new names to call ourselves. And many of us work every day to remember the names of the loved ones we have lost. This conversation has been a chance to honor the history, the power, and the vision of a name change that we choose. And as we move forward, we know that organizing as Lavender Phoenix will mean so much more than just the words we call ourselves. Lavender Phoenix means an everyday commitment to remembering our history. It means organizing with generations in mind, and that every decision we make should reflect the relationships we want to see in our world. It means building a world where, like Vince said, our joy is in the community that we have. For us, Lavender Phoenix is a name, it is a prayer, and it is a promise. Today, you've tuned into Apex Express 94.1 KPFA, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, and online at kpfa.org. Thank you so much to Dino, Vince, Giselle, Lori, Darina, and Leo for joining me today and sharing so much wisdom. If you want to grow and organize alongside us, you can join us. Follow us at Lav Phoenix on Instagram and find us at lavenderphoenix.org. And please check out our website, kpfa.org, to find out more about this name change. Thank you to Paige for doing all the background tech. Apex Express is produced by Miko Lee, Jolina Kian Lee, Preeti Mangala Chekar, and Paige Chung. Tonight's show was produced by me, Yuan, and thanks to the team at KPFA for all their support. Let's continue to organize, remember, and get free together. Have a great night.
The song.